Okay. Good morning, everyone. Saturday, February 4th, 2012, meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. It's cold out there, but and it's cold in here, too, in this room. But we're very glad. We're happy to see you all in the audience. First item on the agenda this morning is very important. It's our Sport Fishing Regulations 2012-13. This is a rule adoption. Got lots of wax to get through here. And Craig Burley, the Fish Management Division manager, is here to help guide us through this process. So thank you. Welcome. Craig?
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Director Anderson, Deputy Director Storr. For the record, my name is Craig Burley, Fish Management Division Manager, and I will be presenting the 2012-2013 Sport Rules for Commission action this morning. What I'd like to do is orient the Commission on where we are in the rule process, what we've done to date relative to these rules. Then I'd like to describe there are 12 rules that we'll be recommending that you adopt as initially proposed, 5 rules that we're proposing amendments to, and then 1 rule that we're recommending that the Commission not adopt at this time. So we started this process this past summer working with staff to develop the 18 proposals that we have before you today. Those proposals were sent out to the public in September. We held public meetings in October as well as met with our advisory groups on these rules. The commission was briefed in December on the rule package, and a public hearing was held in January. Today we're here then to adopt those rules, which would take effect then May of 2012. So the first group of proposals that I'd like to talk about are those that we're proposing to adopt as...
Madam Chair.
Director Anderson?
I apologize for interrupting, but I thought there was one important point in the process piece that we should acknowledge, and that is that there is currently a rules moratorium in place, and there are certain exceptions that were provided by the governor in that rules moratorium. And part of our process and deliberations as we went through this is consideration of those exceptions to ensure that any of the rule proposals we were bringing forward fit within one of those exception categories. And primarily there were two. Either the rules were needed from a conservation perspective, or the change in rules would provide a benefit to the regulated community that was impacted by one or more of these rules. So that's another key consideration that was made in narrowing the number of rule proposals that were brought forward through our process.
Thank you. Very important filter these days that we're trying to be consistent with. Thanks.
So the first group of rules that I'm going to talk about are those that are to address some conservation needs. And again, these are regulations that we're proposing to or recommend adopt as proposed. And in your notebooks for reference, we have a summary document that describes each of the proposals, summarizes the public testimony that we received, as well as provides the department recommendations. There's also WAC language in the notebook, and it's that language that we're going to be recommending that you adopt today. And then finally, the green sheet contains draft motion language for that adoption. So the first grouping are to address conservation needs. The first rule is the declassification of northern pike as a game fish. And the second rule is regarding the Ponderay River, and this is a proposal to allow the use of two poles for that area. The third rule is relative to Chinook salmon in Lower Crab Creek and Red Rock Creeks, and the proposal here is to institute a season to protect those fish. The fourth rule is on the South Fork Tootle River in Region 5, and this proposal is to reduce the fishing season by 2 weeks to provide protection on wild steelhead there. The next proposal is for Salmon Creek in Vancouver, Clark County, and this is to close an area of Salmon Creek above the 72nd Avenue Bridge in Vancouver. The next rule is on Swift Reservoir in the Lewis River watershed, and this is to do two things. One, to remove the landlocked salmon rules, and the other is to remove the two-pole endorsement, or the ability to use two poles in Swift Reservoir, and this is to facilitate the reintroduction of salmon that's planned to start this coming year. And then finally, for this grouping, is the rule for Puget Sound wild steelhead protection. And there are a number of rivers in Puget Sound that we're proposing to close early to protect wild steelhead. At our January commission meeting, we heard public testimony regarding the Skagit River. And we heard that there was an interest in opening the lower section of the Skagit River to fishing for sea run cutthroat trout and bull trout Dolly Varden. So the department went back and looked at that proposal from the public and had some concerns that led us to not recommend that change here. And those were specifically the steelhead in the Skagit River are not currently meeting their escapement. The National Marine Fisheries Service has identified five river systems or populations of steelhead that in total need to stay within a 4.2% impact level. And the current proposal to close that system early in its entirety is factored into our agency's proposal for fisheries to stay within that 4.2%. So with the closure at the mouth of Skagit River, coupled with the other regulations, we're right at the 4.2% impact level for steelhead in those areas. We don't have specific information on incidental encounter of steelhead in that area, but we do have a concern that if that was the area open at this time, that it could potentially concentrate fishing effort in that area and have some unintended consequences. And so for those reasons, we're recommending to adopt this rule as proposed without opening that area for fishing.
Commissioner Carpenter has a comment or a question.
You know, Craig, I understand what you're doing, but in all due respect, you heard from retired regional biologists that managed that area for decades. And I just want to reiterate, that is not an area that people fish for or retain steelhead. As a fly fishing or casting cutthroat trout, Dolly Varden bull trout opportunity. I guess I'm a little bit disturbed that the public testimony from people that are regional and expert in that area were not considered.
Craig, do you want to respond?
Commissioner Carpenter, we department staff did take the public comment that we received from the public in January very seriously, and we spent considerable time looking at that proposal to try to determine if it was feasible to have that type of opportunity. And for the reasons I described, we have concerns about doing that, recognizing that there is a strong interest in fishing for sea run cutthroat trout in that area. But relative to the conservation concerns, we came down on the side of conservation and wanted to propose this at this time.
Okay.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did talk about this at the Fish Committee, and maybe, you know, you can step in and talk about it, but those concerns were heard, and I think part of the larger discussion was what sort of precedent did it set in other parts, other areas, and so it was really, I would say, a recommendation coming out of the Fish Committee to do this as opposed to staff at this point, or at least we understand and support the rationale for it.
Okay. Anything else? Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the next group that I'd like to talk about also are rules that we're proposing to adopt as initially recommended, and those deal with recreational opportunity. And the first is relative to our Lowland Lakes season opener. We currently have an opener that is defined as the last Saturday in April. And what we heard this past year is that in some years, approximately three of the next 10 or so years, there will be a fifth Saturday in April, which the public has indicated an interest in not delaying that opener, that additional time period. And so this proposal is to establish wording that says open the fourth Saturday in April, which would make a consistent a date for that opener. The next regulation is relative to our stream strategy that we implemented 2 years ago in the Puget Sound area. And when we implemented that, we moved to a strategy of tributaries closed unless specifically identified as open in our pamphlet. And during this two-year time period, we have heard from the public, and our staff has worked with individuals to identify a trout opportunity that's consistent with that conservation strategy. And so this proposal was to add some trout opportunity, and we're proposing those be adopted as presented. The next regulation is for steelhead on the Wind River, and this is to open a two-mile section in the upper Wind River for catch and release that expands the catch and release fishery during this time period for about two miles. The Wind River steelhead population is in good shape. It's met its escapement goals in the last 10 years, and so we think providing this opportunity is consistent with the status of that population. The next rule is for the Wainuchi River, and this is relative to the use of boats, and this would, I recall, prohibit the use of boats on the... This would allow the use of boats on the Wenatchee. On the Wainuchi River, excuse me. And then the final rule is lingcod spearfishing, and we have proposed to drop the minimum size limit for lingcod spearfishing season and just retain the upper limit of 36 inches.
Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Craig, just to help me remember, on the Lowland Lake season, we're moving it back to the fourth Saturday in April. But we also had a discussion to take it to the third Saturday in April. The April-May season is critical economic time for most of those resorts in eastern Washington, and if we get them in the water earlier, but I thought there was a reason why we couldn't go to the third we had to do it in a two-step process or something?
Commissioner Duvio, when we received this petition from the mayor of Konkanoli about a year ago, we did some analysis to try to understand what the best timing would be and the best proposal for going forward. And some considerations that we looked at were, one, we were trying to align the opening day when we see the weather improving to ensure that we were getting good turnout on the opening day, as well as allowing for our hatchery system to be able to get those fish to size and stocked out into the waters close to but just prior to the opening day. And so it was for those reasons we recommended that we consider that fourth Saturday in April rather than moving that any earlier in the month of April.
Thank you.
I'd like to move to regulations that the department is proposing to recommend for adoption as amended. And the first rule is relative to sturgeon and white sturgeon in Puget Sound. The department initially proposed a regulation that would close the retention of white sturgeon year-round in Puget Sound and the tributaries. And during the public process, we received substantial comment. We heard from the public that there was opposition to eliminating retention of white sturgeon in Puget Sound. We received a petition as well as numerous communications in addition to the petition of approximately 2,500 individuals. Also, though, since the comment period, I believe the Commission has received a letter from the Fisheries and Oceans Canada supporting that proposal relative to impacts to Fraser River fish in Puget Sound. So based on this, what we heard both at the January Commission meeting as well as the written communication that we received, we looked at a way to develop a limited retention proposal in the Puget Sound area. And what we did is we looked at the Columbia River harvest during a base period of 1988 to 1998. It's a similar base period that we've used out on the coast in Willapa and Grace Harbor to manage those fisheries. We looked at that time period. We looked at the harvests occurring outside of the Columbia River and determined that we could support a fishery that's consistent with the lower Columbia River fisheries and current coastal fisheries of about 150 fish. We looked then at the last 4 years of harvest data in the Puget Sound, and we determined that that would need to see about a 73% reduction in the Puget Sound fishing in order to achieve that objective. We then looked at the harvest data from our catch record cards by month for the time period of about year 2000 to 2009 and looked at harvest by month to develop some proposals that would stay within that approximate 27% harvest target from the previous four-year average. And we looked at a couple of scenarios, and the scenario that we've included in your commission notebook and in the WAC language is a May 15 to June 30 time period. And this time period was chosen. It's the time period when we see high harvest occurring in Puget Sound. So it's a shorter window, but it's a window when there's higher harvest being reported. We also reached out to some of the folks that provided testimony in January talking about that option as well as another alternative that would look at a longer time period say, a July 1 through October 15 time period, which would provide more days of opportunity, but at a time period when harvest is lower. And while I didn't hear agreement from the fishing community, we did hear some support for the May 15 to June 30. I did have follow-up conversations with individuals that were representing those groups, and I did hear a request for a proposal that is a split season, and I have that identified here on the screen today. And that's a scenario where we would allow fishing to occur, retention to occur June 1 through June 30, and then a second season in the fall, September 1 to October 15. What the constituents are saying is that if we had this type of split season, it would provide for some fishing opportunity in the Puget Sound during that June time period, but it would also provide some fishing in the fall time period, which is more oriented towards the tributary areas. And both of these proposals fit within the 20% or 27% harvest that we had identified. So either of these would work. I think you heard yesterday that we still have some concern being expressed from a large number of the public that we need to take a broader look at our sturgeon harvest regulations in Puget Sound, and this next year it's likely we're going to need to take a broader statewide look at white sturgeon regulations, given recent reductions that we've also taken in the Columbia River.
Okay, before we move on, this is the big hot topic of the year. Commissioner Schmitten, you want to go first?
I'll wait for Craig for a second. So let me begin to say I very much appreciate how you explained this. I thought that you were very fair to all the views. My question between the two, and I think you answered it, but I'm going to ask it differently. Are there any conservation differences between option one and two? Are they, for all intent and purposes, the same?
Commissioner Schmitten, we looked at these options relative to historical harvest on a monthly basis. And so in doing that analysis, the two options are virtually the same in terms of projected harvest. There's about a percentage point difference between the two, but both fall within the 27% harvest that we have identified. So based on historical harvest, these should both be about the same.
If I can follow up on another question. I noticed both also retain the initial 5-bag that we currently have. Was there any consideration to reduce that bag limit?
Commissioner Schmitten, we have had some discussions about the reduction in the season limit from 5 fish to some other number. But staff are thinking that it might be appropriate to have that discussion in a larger context as we move forward on a statewide basis rather than take action in the Puget Sound this year, given that we recognize with a 16% harvest rate on Columbia River sturgeon, we're likely going to need to take a broader look at harvest of Columbia River sturgeon, and that could lead to a discussion broader than the Columbia River itself.
Thank you, Chair.
Yep. Commissioner Carpenter.
Craig, thank you, Madam Chair. Being I live in an area generally that is a significant area that these sturgeon are targeted, I've been contacted by a lot of people, a lot of people that fish sturgeon. And I think the common denominator from that is I ask a lot of questions. I said, well, as the size of the slot limit for sturgeon is what it is, the average sturgeon that people retain is between 40 and 55 pounds. And the discussion went further. I said, okay, so if you got a family of four and you eat a lot of fish, how many do you need during the course of the year to feed your family? Now, the general response, the average was one, worst case, two. So I don't understand if we have a conservation issue here, and so we're weighing conservation against opportunity, why we don't look at reducing the bag limit now instead of the annual bag limit now instead of waiting until later, and maybe just stretch out the opportunity a little bit longer. I think that would be worthy of some additional discussion. These folks don't need to keep five sturgeon, they don't want to keep five sturgeon, so why do we have it out there?
Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. I think the analysis that the department's done relative to the annual limit shows us that of the catch record cards that are returned, 75% of those cards only have one sturgeon harvested annually, and there's another approximate 16% have two fish annually marked on their card. So about 91% of the cards that are turned in have either one or two sturgeon punched. And so reducing the annual limit now would not effectively reduce the harvest overall significant enough to really see a big change in opportunity. So what we're thinking is, given that there's a small percentage of the public that mark three, four, or five fish on their card, it would be appropriate to take a look at that as maybe an additional step that we could take more broadly statewide, including the Columbia River potentially next year. But we'd want to take a look at that in that broader context to see if there were savings that we could achieve that way.
Well, Craig, I just think that might conflict a little bit with the image that we're trying to project and what we're trying to do based on opportunity. And perhaps the fellows, the people that might actually take four or five sturgeon may not unfortunately turn their cards in as regularly as others. So I just I still think it's something that should be considered.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm coming at this a little bit differently than I'm hearing you guys come from it. We've been managing sturgeon pretty intensely in the Columbia River. We make the assumption that the great majority of the stock in the Columbia River is Columbia River sturgeon. Makes life simple. In Puget Sound, we know we have a mixed stock fishery for that sturgeon. We know we've got Fraser River fish. We know we've got Columbia River fish. We know we've got Sacramento fish. We've gotten a letter from Canada, from the Regional Director General Fisheries and Oceans Canada, saying the Fraser River stock is a federally listed endangered stock where they don't allow any retention at all. The proposal that was initially put on the table to close Puget Sound for retention is not at all a close Puget Sound for fishing for sturgeon. I mean, the catch and release is a good way to go. We're looking at a Columbia River stock that we have concerns about already. They were talked about moratorium just last month. We haven't really factored in these 150 fish into the equation, and maybe it'll fit, but that has been part of the calculation. In fact, we had conversations that we were going to have to change how we're allocating the fish within the areas of the river soon because the numbers were getting so low in the Columbia River. This just adds to that. And it also assumes that all the 150 fish are coming out of the Columbia River stock. So if it's actually a much more mixed stock fishery than Columbia River, that 150, part of those are coming out of Fraser River. Part of those are coming out of Sacramento. So again, that's a lot more unknowns for me to manage that stock. And I think the prudent thing to do is to close it for retention for the next year or so while we get more data and can have a much more informed decision about it. The points that are already being raised about is it you know, two retention or five? Those are big questions that we'll be having to look at in the next year as we deal with sturgeon more. I also think the question of circle hooks needs to be put on the table from a, is that a nice way to approach if you're going to be fishing for sturgeon, you know, use sturgeon hooks. And so there's more questions, but for this proposal, I think there's enough unknowns. We are supposed to, as a general principle, manage from a precautionary principle and manage a mixed stock fishery to the weakest stock. I don't think this proposal does that. I think we really need to pause for a year or two, stop retention, and get more data.
Commissioner Mencken?
I think one important issue here is that we need to be knowing full well that we have Columbia River fish in Puget Sound, and even Sacramento fish in Puget Sound. With regard to the Columbia River, I think it's important that we begin to have some consistency in the way we manage these stocks of fish. I think that the level of harvest that we're proposing here is consistent with that insofar as the reductions in the Columbia River are over time close to 75%. I believe this is, Craig, a 73% reduction or thereabouts.
Yes, Commissioner Mencken, 73% of the recent four-year average.
So I think what we're doing is we're beginning to fall in line with managing this as a single stock of fish with the main spawning population in the Columbia River. There's no indication that we have spawning fish in Puget Sound of these fish that wander up from the Columbia River. I think the same thing can be said for circle hooks. I don't think that we at this point need to consider circle hooks until we consider circle hooks for the entire population. I'm in concurrence with Commissioner Jennings in the need to examine the use of circle hooks for this population of fish, but I think we need to be, again, we need to be consistent in managing this stock consistently throughout its range in terms of circle hooks and in terms of harvest.
Okay. Commissioner Carpenter?
The thing that I think feel the strongest about, Craig, is I think there's an incredible amount of unknowns as it relates to Puget Sound sturgeon. I think we've got a real hole in the database, and I think it would really be important to engage the user groups, the constituents out there that have come to the table and offered to help the department gather information and volunteer their own time and boats and equipment to try and, you know, provide you with additional tools in the future so we can do what my colleagues have talked about, which is have a more pragmatic discussion of how we're going to manage in the future. So I would really encourage you and your staff to do the appropriate outreach to these people. And I think it's important to get them engaged. They care about the opportunity. They care about the resource. And I think engaging them is a real key to future benefit, both to the stocks and to the public.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair. You know, it seems to me we're just talking about a one-year period of time until we're right back at this discussion. And several things play into this for my recommendation. One, we're giving very short notice to Puget Sound, which have had a ongoing fishery for over a decade. I think there's a need then to phase in what we do. There's an equity issue that we're getting at with the Columbia and the Willapa that we need to move towards. Given that the conservation impacts are the same, you know, I would recommend the second option, and there's a couple reasons. But the one reason I like the most is that Craig has sought out views of the community, and the community has said, you know, we can live with this. We understand your needs. It meets the 150 fish. So, you know, given all that, and we're going to talk about this next year, I guarantee you, plus the need for some DNA work, I would support the second issue.
Any other comments? I think it brings up a larger question, too, which is how do we manage, given the uncertainties, given our need to conduct additional science in our limited resources for solving all the uncertainties out there, we have to make management decisions in the face of uncertainties. And as much as the precautionary principle sounds great, it is a presumption that would lead us into perhaps not providing the opportunity that our constituents are looking for and paying for. So I think accommodation in this second option sounds right to me, too. When you get around to looking at this larger question of management of the overall stock in more of, I mean, we're always looking for that strategic long-term big picture approach that makes sense. I'd like us to have a thoughtful way of addressing our limited capacity to do additional science and resolve all uncertainties. We've got to have a meaningful dialogue with the public about what our resources allow us to do. And the expectation of certainty, you know, is just something that we have to address very deliberately. That said, the idea of bringing citizens into the mix is great for doing citizen science. We talked about this yesterday in terms of wildlife management, too. And I had a little conversation with Craig before the meeting started about bringing students. Brad Smith from Western Washington and my work with the University of Washington, we know that there's student energy out there that's very cheap to apply, and I hope we can figure out that way of bringing the resources of the university system into working on some of these uncertainties, because we clearly don't have the money to hire employees to go out there and collect all the data that would satisfy everybody. So that's one thing that I think we ought to be looking at, too, in the process of the big picture strategic look. Director Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think from where I sit and that we've been scrambling over the last year to 2 years to try to react responsibly to the data that we've been getting, primarily originating out of the Columbia River fishery, to the decline in the sturgeon population in really all of the year classes, but certainly in the spawning population, the legal category, and the sublegals, we have strong indications that we have declines in all three segments of the population. And I think the action that was taken by the commission in January and subsequently got agreement with Oregon to make a significant reduction in the exploitation rate is a good first step. I'll be surprised if it's the only step we need to take. There's certainly indications that even at 16%, that exploitation rate may be too high. What we're trying to do here, and it's already been expressed by one or more of the commissioners in the discussion, is we're trying to apply the reductions, albeit in a relatively short period of time, we're trying to apply the reductions in a fair manner. I think that's what caused us to bring this proposal forward. I wouldn't want to leave this discussion with the understanding of exactly what additional information and research we will be able to do over the course of the next year or 2 years, particularly as it relates to areas which have relatively small numbers of fish taken, like Puget Sound, like the Willapa, like Grace Harbor. And I think that we also have some similar issues in estuaries off of Oregon that we need to talk with Oregon about to ensure that they are also making reductions in those areas commensurate with the reductions that were taken in the Columbia and in other areas in Washington. Sue Farlinger is my counterpart. She is the vice chair of the Pacific Salmon Commission. I'm just beginning to develop a relationship with her, and I'm looking forward to talking with her about the sturgeon issue week after next when we're together at a commission meeting in Vancouver. I would like for us, the department, to be given the opportunity to brainstorm a little bit on what type of additional, what type of a research plan we think we could develop, and even if we get low-cost or no-cost volunteers, it still comes at a cost to us in terms of putting the research plan together, coordinating it, getting the data, compiling the data, analyzing the data, all that sort of thing, as you well know, is part of it. So I'd like to be given maybe a couple of months to scope that out and maybe bring something back, at least to the Fish Committee initially, to give you some thoughts on our thoughts on what we might be able to do. And in that time frame, of course, we'd also be talking with Commissioner Smith about the idea that Chair Walker brought forward. I think the issues about the bag limit, all of those things are fair game and will be part of the discussion, as well as the use of circle hooks, those kinds of things, as we further refine our response to this really sharp decline that we're seeing in this population that I know we're all taking very seriously.
Thank you. Commissioner Jennings?
So a practical question. You said you calculated about 150 fish. Are you tracking creel surveys to know when we get to 150 fish, do we close the season? Is the season based on the best guess of how many fish it'll take this period of time to catch 150 fish based on last year's catch per unit effort?
Thank you, Commissioner Jennings. So the 150 fish estimate is using the average harvest by monthly time period over the last, from 2000 to 2009. And so that would be evaluated against returns for catch record cards. So it would be a post-season evaluation. There currently is not a sturgeon creel survey in Puget Sound.
Did you want to follow up?
I lost my train of thought. So.
Commissioner Mencken?
Have we had discussions with our co-managers as to what they feel about this activity and this type of restriction on the fishery? And I have, at this point, I guess I don't understand or know just exactly what the co-managers are fishing for, if they're fishing for sturgeon out there, and what their catch is, what their harvest is.
Commissioner Mencken, we have taken a look at the tribal harvest of sturgeon in Puget Sound, and it is very low. The tribal fisheries typically have language in their regulations that allows for some retention of sturgeon in their commercial fisheries. That's reported on the fish tickets. We have that data, very low, in the somewhere around 30s to 50 fish annually, roughly speaking. We don't have a state tribal harvest management plan for sturgeon at this point, but we do know that the harvest rates reported and the fish tickets are very low in the tribal fisheries.
How low is very low?
So in 2010, there were 13 fish harvested, 2009, 18, 2008, 31 fish, 2007, 25 fish, 2006, 9 fish. So in that range.
Commissioner Jennings?
I was just going to, you know, I did some quick math, and it's not quite right, but, you know, you use the numbers, just going back to Commissioner Carpenter's point about the five fish and how that could be, that can be meaningful even if it's only 9 or 10%. If, you know, I think it was 72% got one fish. Out of 100 fishermen, that's 72 fish. The next 16% got two fish, that's 32. And if you assume everybody else gets five, which is just making the math easy, that's, you know, upwards of 45. So that's almost potentially 30% of the total catch comes from those individuals that do keep a large number. So really ratcheting that down may make a meaningful difference in the total annual catch.
Commissioner Jennings, I do have some additional breakdown for the number percentage by card and for about 7% of the cards have three fish recorded, 1% has four fish, and 1% has five fish.
You were making the amendment, and Jared's going to read the mail.
What are you doing in the case? We're
getting our act together here. Okay. And now, is there any more discussion about Puget Sound Sturgeon? Okay. Then we can go on.
So then I would move to the next regulation, and this is relative to the San Poil River that flows into the Lake Roosevelt. And this rule has been developed with the Colville tribe, and the proposal here is to establish three boundary areas on the river to set a season to provide some protection to red-band rainbow trout as well as kokanee, and to also set harvest limits on those fish. Initially, the department proposed a 16-fish walleye daily limit, and based on what we've heard from the public, and this relates to two additional proposals I'll reference, we're proposing to retain the 8-fish daily limit for walleye. But all other portions of that rule would remain in effect.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think that's a prudent way to resolve the issue at this time. I just want to ensure we stay involved. I think the problem we have with the abnormally weight of the fish is most likely caused by that abnormal drawdown that we had in effect on the food supply. We should get significant change in that population if we have a normal year this year. So I'd like to make sure that we revisit this next year if we still continue to have the size, weight of the walleye continue to deteriorate. I think there is a problem, and we're assuming that it was the drawdown that caused it. We're not sure, so I think this one that we need to continue to stay on top of and not wait 3 years to revisit it. So, but I do support the status quo.
Do you want to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Duvia, the department will be continuing to monitor the status of the walleye population in the Lake Roosevelt, which would include San Poil, Lower Spokane, those inundated waters. So we will be doing that annually, and we can provide summaries of that information to the Fish Committee to see those progress and when the appropriate time would be to recommend a change.
I think it's very inexpensive to do that. We have a number of walleye tournaments, and the weights come in from those things, and it gives us a pretty good example. If they bring in, 1,500, 2,000 fish, and last year the weight was down a third or more, so we can just monitor and take a look at those tournaments for us to see what a good sampling population is. I don't think we have to, a case where we have to spend a lot of money to see if they're changing their structure.
Commissioner Duvey, I was just checking with staff. We do annually conduct an index survey in the Lake Roosevelt. It's our fall walleye index survey with a netting effort. So we do have data that we can report, and I appreciate the recommendation for collecting the tournament information as well.
Okay.
The next rule is our coastal stream strategy rule, and this proposal, as you recall, is to move forward with implementing our stream strategy that we did a couple of years ago in the Puget Sound, where we move to a closed and less open strategy, and so opportunities to fish are captured in our fishing pamphlet. During the public process, there were two things that came to light that the department would like to propose amendments to. The first is relative to the closure date for steelhead on the Willapaw and the Nacelle Rivers. We heard public testimony at the January meeting as well that there may be a situation where our escapement goals for those two systems are too high, and in effect causing the department to recommend more restrictive regulations than are necessary. I spoke with our regional staff, and they also are interested in reviewing those escapement objectives to determine if, in fact, they're set appropriately or could be modified. Given that situation, we're recommending to not take action at this time to reduce the season for the Willapaw and Nacelle and revert back to the current season closures, which is March 31 on the Willapaw and April 15 on the Nacelle River. We'll take a look at that information over this next year, and we'll determine if there are regulations that we need to bring forward, which would likely be for the 2014 season. The other regulation amendments that I'd like to talk about is in the Clallam, Grace Harbor, and Pacific counties, we did get feedback from the public that there were some areas where had proposed closing that were either above anadromous barriers or were in areas where we did not have concerns for anadromous fish and that we could allow some trout fishing opportunity. And there's approximately 11 of those that are included in the WAC language that you have in your notebook and are identified in red as changes. And so we're proposing at this time to also provide those trout fishing opportunities in this amended language.
Okay. I appreciate that. I appreciate the work, the added work that you did since our last meeting on these topics. I did want to ask a question about, it's come up with some of my constituents about the strategy, or ask you to think in the next year or two about how we deal with the added pressure that's going to be focused on Olympic Peninsula rivers as the steelhead opportunity in Puget Sound is constrained. I mean, we're seeing more and more pressure on the Olympic Peninsula rivers, and there's a concern about what do we do? What's our long-term strategy going to be to prevent those rivers from going downhill? So we don't have a rule that we're looking at this year, but I wanted that to be part of the consideration in the longer term.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The next regulation relates also to the Lake Roosevelt, and that is, one thing that I would just to clarify on the coastal stream strategy, with these changes being proposed, we would recommend moving forward with the remainder of the package as previously presented. So then to the lower Spokane River, this is really an inundated section of the Spokane River that's consistent with Lake Roosevelt, and many of our constituents' mind is part of the Lake Roosevelt. And this rule is designed to better align those fishing regulations with Lake Roosevelt, specifically allowing a two-pole fishery and consistent daily limits for the kokanee fisheries. We also proposed the 16 fish daily limit for walleye initially, and that is the portion of this rule that we're recommending be amended, and that is to go back to or retain the walleye daily limit of 8 fish in the lower Spokane. The next rule is the Kettle River fishery, and here initially the department proposed removing selective gear restrictions for all anglers in a 9-mile section of the Kettle River near the city of Curlew. It's about 14% of the Kettle River that currently has selective gear rules. We heard quite a bit of testimony from the public on this regulation. We heard and received a petition from a local community recommending that we remove the selective gear restrictions on the entire Kettle River from Barstow Bridge upstream. We also heard from the public that this was a good quality fishery, and there was some concerns that if we removed the selective gear rules that it would impact that fishery. And then finally, we did hear some testimony that it would be appropriate to allow the removal of the selective gear rules for juvenile anglers 14 years and younger. The idea was to allow juveniles the opportunity to fish in the area around the town of Curlew, promote some additional opportunity for juveniles, but at the same time retain selective gear restrictions for adults so that it would minimize this impact in that local area for those fish, but still provide an opportunity for juveniles, but still using selective gear rules for adult anglers. And so based on what we heard, the department's recommending that we implement that type of a strategy. We've spoken with our enforcement program, and they believe this is an enforceable rule. It would be the first in the state, but we think that this would be a good regulation to propose. So we're recommending that.
Okay.
And then finally, as we've spoken earlier, for Lake Roosevelt walleye, we're proposing to drop this rule at this time, not adopt it, and to retain the current regulations, and as we spoke previously, to continue monitoring the walleye population status and to bring our recommendations to the commission based on what we observe.
Okay. Terrific. Very clear. Always very organized. Do a good job, Greg.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to express appreciation. You know, I come away feeling that staff are extremely responsive to the fishing public. I mean, we are crafting these rules and massaging them and trying to shape them in a way that strikes the right balance and makes our constituents feel that they're being listened to. So I do appreciate that so much. Not all agencies do that. Okay, any comments, further questions? If not, Commissioner Duvia, ready for motion?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I move to adopt permanent amendments to WAC 220-212-090 classifications, non-native aquatic animal species, WAC 220-55-220 two-pole endorsement, WAC 220-56-100 definitions, personal use fishing, and WAC 220-56-235 possession limits, bottom fish, WAC 220-56-282 sturgeon areas, seasons limit, and unlawful acts, WAC 232-12019 classification of game fish, WAC 232-28619 Washington food fish and game fish freshwater exceptions to statewide rules as presented by staff.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
The motion's been seconded by Commissioner Schmitten. The motion's been made and seconded as read. Do we have further discussion? Commissioner Mankin, do you have an amendment?
Yes, I have a further amendment. I move to amend the section of WAC 220-56-282, sturgeon areas, seasons, limits, and unlawful. Item number two, which presently reads, it is unlawful to retain white sturgeon in Puget Sound and all Puget Sound tributaries, to read as my amendment is, it is lawful to retain white sturgeon in Puget Sound and all Puget Sound tributaries from June 1st through June 30th and September 1st through October 15th.
Do I hear a second to the motion to amend?
I'll second.
The motion's been seconded by Commissioner Carpenter. Do we have a discussion of the amendment motion? Commissioner Jennings?
I've already said that I think the answer is that we should close retention until we get more information. But based on what the director said about upcoming conversations with Canada about, so that there's an understanding that we do want to respect the fact that there are Fraser River stock that is a closed to retention fishery that we do respect, in fact, that it's an international situation and we want to be cognizant of that as we move forward. So I just want to say it gives me a lot more comfort knowing that you'll be having those direct communications with them on this topic.
Very good. Any other comments on the motion to amend? Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Motion was opposed by Commissioner Jennings, otherwise passed. Okay. So we have the main motion on the table now that has been amended. Any further discussion of the main, the amended main motion? Commissioner Schmidt.
Chair, just clarification. That included all those that the staff had recommended. I do have a comment then on item 14, Kettle River Fisheries Edition.
Okay.
I presume that's included in this proposal. Mm-hmm. Just kind of a personal concern, I guess. Given the fragile nature of native red band trout, you know, which are not prevalent throughout the state, I am a little uneasy with this proposal. I do support it. I support it primarily because now it's targeted for youth fisheries. And that limitation, I think, is a good one. But I would like to ask that the staff very closely watch the impacts of this fishery, report back to the commission both the interest and effort and any concerns arising from the fishery.
Okay. Duly noted. Any other comments, discussion on the amended main motion? Hearing none, I think we're ready to vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. Okay, thanks, Craig. We'll see you again next year.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. That's a threat.